Welcome back to another edition of Ecosystem TV. And today we continue to talk to Serge Christians, a cyber veteran with 15 years of experience in cyber compliance and data protection. Serge and I met when he was a participant in an ecosystem executive roundtable that I hosted here in Singapore. And we were discussing how to build a secure digital-first organization. And Serge, during the event, you spoke about the difference and similarities between data protection and data privacy. And I'm sure many organizations, many, security, even IT staff, they still use the terms interchangeably. So I'd love to hear what you, said that day, if you could, but also just tell our audience what you think the difference between the two are.
Do I remember? What did I also? You talk so much today, huh?
I'm sure you can.
In a nutshell, data protection is about securing data against unauthorized access, but data privacy is about authorized access. So who has my data? Who defines it? Who protects it? What do I allow them to see? That's the difference. And it quite often has a legal angle, whereas data protection has a technical angle. Having said that, they are both about crown jewels, things you do not want to lose. So it's both about protection. Think about it like this. You have a database with, let's say, names and passport numbers, NRIC numbers. That data you don't want to lose. But if you lose it, wouldn't it be nice if it was encrypted so they cannot read it? And wouldn't it be nice if you lose it and they decrypt it if they can? And they find out that, oh, it's not a full NRIC number, but only the last three. So it's no use. So another way to look at it, data protection is essentially a technical issue and data privacy is more a legal one. And that's why the DPO, the data privacy officer, is quite often part of the legal team. And the CISO, who is protecting data, is part of the IT team because it's essentially a technical issue. But at the end of the day, they're all about trust. Can I trust you? Keep my data safe. Can I trust my personal data is not being abused? Like I said, they're both crown jewels of the company. So very important.
It's interesting that you should bring up that point about trust, because we did a study recently for healthcare organizations in ANZ, and we had some 80% of people saying that data is important to us, right? And about 44% said that we don't have trust in the data at all. So it's interesting that you talk about it. It's obviously data security is one aspect of it. But I found it interesting that you brought up trust there. So going back to data privacy, what are the biggest threats to data privacy, in your opinion, that an organization faces today?
Yeah, well, the business threat is very well defined, because data privacy laws in countries which are maturing quickly after the GDPR was launched in 2018 will fine you when they find out that you lose private data. So losing personal data, government will give you a penalty, and that may well bankrupt you. In Europe at the moment, the GDPR maximum fine is 4% of your global turnover, which equals $20 million. That's a lot of money. But actually, that's not the most important part. If that happens, it will be published. Your clients will read it and they will lose, again, trust. They will lose your trust and they do not want to do business with you. So your brand will suffer unrepairable damage, reputational damage. I think that's the biggest business threat in this case.
Cool. And what about the technical threats?
We see that most attacks start very simple. Like I said, cyber criminals are lazy. So it's very simple to ramp up, organize a phishing attack, send out tens of thousands of emails to companies with a button. There's always somebody that will hit the button. The phishing attack is successful. It will plant malware on your computer. It will exfiltrate personal data via the back door, and it's done. You lost it. Also, stealing credentials, passwords, and usernames. It's very easy to buy them on the dark web. And with those, you can just try and play where you can get in and which company, plant some malware and exfiltrate the data, and it's already done. So human firewall, again, I keep saying that, I guess, the human firewall is the biggest challenge we have right now. Educating our people, our staff, cybersecurity awareness training for our employees that they do the right thing, because they are the at the moment, the low-hanging fruit for cyber criminals. That's how they get in.
Yeah, I like how you talk about the human firewall. But the other thing that we have found, you know, one of the common sources, or at least a worry of infiltration, is third-party applications or partner ecosystems.
Yeah.
And obviously, in today's world, as the name of our organization suggests, ecosystems, you know, is the way to go, right? So how do you protect yourself from that? How do you ensure that your partner who has access to your system, or at least part of it, is actually being cyber compliant? You know, that must be a challenge too.
That is a big challenge, because it's also about responsibility. If I do business with company A and we sign contracts, then I am assuming that company A is doing everything they can and they need to do and are compliant with all the regulations that I need to be as well to keep everything safe. But how about the supplier of the supplier, or the supplier of the supplier of the supplier? So how big are we drawing these circles around ourselves? And how about due diligence? Do we need to audit all our people, all our third-party companies every year? Actually, yes. And they should audit their third parties as well and their logistic chain. This is a very complex ecosystem, and it has a lot of holes. And that's why it's still happening. And in that logistic chain, the lower you get, the more SMEs are in there. Coming back to the previous topic, question number two or three. So the SMEs are not that well protected for reasons I mentioned before. So just go down the chain, find an SME that plays low-hanging fruit, get in there and take your time, and just stepping stone up until you are at the big fish. And it takes time, because they are patient. It can take months. Somebody will hit the phishing button and somebody will get into the system and then look around and find a connection to the other system. It's a dirty game, I know, and it's very complex to secure as well.
I know we spoke a little about small and medium enterprises, but there are some challenges that large enterprises face as well, right, in cybersecurity. Yeah. So again, we did a study in Australia where we asked enterprises, how many cyber tools do you use? And we found that on an average, they use 51 tools. And these, I'm sure, are the ones that they are aware of, right? Now, clearly, this complicates matters for cybersecurity teams, especially, like, you know, we see that tech skills shortage is a reality in many countries across the world. So how do you mitigate this challenge, you know, having your, you know, having excessive focus on individual niche cyber tools?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and absolutely a valid problem that you put on the table here. I even found companies with more than 200 tech stack items. How to manage that, right? In the military, we talk about span of control. How many people can you lead and still be effective? And I, as a CISO, look at my tech stack like that. How many technology parts, defensive cybersecurity tools can I manage and still be effective? 200, I cannot. I cannot log in every day and have a look at these things, or look how data flows between these stacks. So that means you need more people, right? So the bigger your tech stack, the more specialist you need to run your technology stack as well. And at the end, it's not helping you at all, because, you know, cybersecurity is about reducing risk. We always take a risk-based approach. But if you're unable to see your cybersecurity holistically, if you don't have a full view of your vulnerabilities and all the variables that play a role, then you're doomed to solve every little risk separately, one by one. Although you are lucky, because for every single cybersecurity problem, there are many high-tech solutions out there. Don't forget, I'm guessing about half of people who claim to work in cybersecurity are actually salespeople trying to sell their products. They may be good products, but at the end, if you have more than 200 of them, it's not helping you anymore. Because you end up with a whole box of tools, solutions, platforms, and they all solve a little part of the puzzle, but they don't communicate with each other. They don't integrate. They all do their own thing. You cannot manage that.
And I'm sure at some point in the future, we'll continue this conversation. I'd like to explore a little more about SecOps and analytics in the next conversation that we have, because much that I'd love to continue talking, that's all the time we have for today. Serge, always a pleasure talking to you. It was absolutely amazing talking to you today as well. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. See you next time.